This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll start with Erin Monroe Wesley. She is the COO, the Chief Operating Officer at the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, and she will be talking about all kinds of things regarding legislative actions as we speak, and developments in higher education, the R&D tax credit, and much more. We'll talk with Erin Monroe Wesley about the latest endeavors from the Chamber in Baton Rouge. And there has been a court ruling, we understand, from Judge Janice Clark in the case against homeowner and business person, real estate mogul Steve Myers. He was sued based on people not related living in some of his dwellings, and there has been a ruling, and we will talk about that as we move along this morning. But first, the news. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. If you're calling outside the local area, please dial 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We start with Executive Vice President, Chief Operating Officer of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, Erin Monroe Wesley. She oversees day-to-day operations at BRAC while directing the implementation of BRAC's strategic plan. And prior to her most recent role, she served as the Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs. Of course, she's following what's going on at the state capitol, having worked also for some government entities, including Lieutenant Governors Mitch Landrieu, Chief Counsel, right for him when he was Lieutenant Governor, and Governor Kathleen Blanco. She was Associate Executive Counsel for Governor Blanco and a legislative attorney for the Louisiana Senate. Good morning.
Good morning.
Erin Wesley. What's your take about how the legislature is going in the first month at the Capitol?
Well, it's certainly been a very interesting session. We're now at week three. It feels like a lifetime. There have been a lot of issues debated thus far, whether it's tax reform, Medicaid expansion, whether it's the budget. So a lot to do during these next weeks, and looking forward to the debate.
Is it going well?
From BRAC's perspective, absolutely yes.
Okay. I know you've taken a position, BRAC has, on the breakaway school district.
We have, and we did some research on last year regarding independent school districts. And so if you look at our website, www.brac.org, we engage along with the Baton Rouge Area Foundation, a study by Dr. Richardson and Dr. Heidelberg regarding independent school districts. And in looking at that, looking at legacy calls, looking at the issue of financial stability of districts, and also looking at demographics. And so our board took a position early this year to address new proposed school districts. And so our position was to remain neutral if each of those three elements were met. Again, mutually agreed upon legacy costs, how to look at that financial impact and capacity of that new school district, and also looking at demographics to ensure that the new school district and the existing school district align in terms of demographics. We certainly see that there's still some unanswered questions regarding that, and for those reasons, we are opposed to the bill in its current form. But certainly still welcome the dialogue. I know that Senator White and the EBR school system continue to meet to try to hash out some concerns on both sides of the aisle.
That one last year came very close to passage. It's a constitutional amendment. We'll
yes.
have to go to a vote of the people, but you have any feel on where lawmakers are moving in this particular case?
I'm not sure. I mean, we're still early on in the process. Both of those bills, so you have the constitutional amendment and the companion bill, and both of those bills were heard in Senate Education last week. They came out of committee without objection. I know that that companion bill, which is a statutory bill, will be heard in Senate Finance early next week. And so they've yet to be fully debated by the full Senate and the full House, and we'll certainly see where things go.
297-5633 for Erin Monroe Wesley of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. Now, there are also some bills regarding higher education, and you have some thoughts to share, particularly about tuition fee autonomy. What's your take?
Absolutely. I mean, tuition fee autonomy certainly is important not only to the capital region but the state as a whole. If you look at the higher education funding over the last several years, particularly looking at fiscal year 2009 to the current fiscal year, there's been a decline in state general funds by roughly 26.6%. And so we know that with the Grad Act, they're able to have some tuition fee flexibility, but that has been offset by that decrease in state general funds. And so there certainly is a real financial crisis facing our higher education institutions. I know that that there are several bills out there that propose to allow for that tuition flexibility, and so transferring that authority from the legislature to those higher education management boards. But we know that lingering issue out there is also TOPS, and so there are also some TOPS reform measures out there as well.
Well, you framed it well with TOPS being such a an expense.
Yes.
Every time tuition goes up, the cost of doing business goes up, meaning it costs more to fund higher education.
That's correct.
So what can be done to correct that?
Well, I know the legislature is looking at TOPS reform. I know there's a bill in committee today to propose a cap on TOPS. That's proposed by Senator Nevers. There are other bills out there to having other tweaks to TOPS, if you will. And so we'll see where that debate goes. There have been several proposals over the last several years. There's been no movement in reform. But maybe this year is different. I mean, maybe with the crisis facing higher ed, there's a need or will by the legislature to do something with TOPS.
Okay. Is BRAC taking a position?
We're still vetting the issue. Our board met this week to kind of hash out the research around TOPS and what proposed reform could look like. We're still developing our research and policy brief on that, and we'll propose something to the public on next week. Mm-hmm. But we have looked at that issue, and we'll have some recommendations coming shortly.
877-217-5757 or Inkstershow at WRKF.org. Aaron Wesley is the guest, the chief operating officer for the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. She works hand in glove with Adam Knapp.
Yes.
Katie downtown wants to know how BRAC decides on positions. Is it a board decision? Is it Adam Knapp's decision? Is it your decision? Who makes the call?
No, very good question. I mean, all of our decisions are based in policy, based in the research and findings of best practices across states. And so we have an economic competitiveness side. That's our policy and research arm. Within that side, we have several issue councils. So education, workforce, transportation. We have issue councils on specific subjects of interest that impact economic development. And so we begin with those thought leaders on those issues. They present proposals. Those changes to staff, and we then present those changes directly to our executive committee and then to the full board for their consideration.
So the board votes.
Ultimately, it's a board vote, but again, you know, sound in research.
How many members are there on the board?
We have roughly 50 plus members on our board.
So if it's a 25 to 24 vote?
It's a majority vote of the board, but we've never really had that close of a vote on issues.
Okay. Now you're immersed in some other measures that are being discussed at the Capitol, the R&D tax credit.
Yes, R&D tax proposal by Major Tebow. He's a representative in the House and in our Capital Region. Not only R&D looking at quality jobs, enterprise zone, there are several measures out there that are LED managed incentives that impact economic development. And particularly with the R&D tax credit, working with the department, looking at some of their administrative challenges, we've had a severe backlog in approving R&D applications. And so the proposal going forward is to tie in that state R&D tax credit to the federal tax credit to ease that administrative burden by LED.
You think that's a good thing?
Certainly. Absolutely.
All right. What about the Redevelopment Authority's blight bill?
Yes, they have a couple of blight bills. They have a House bill that's going to be heard hopefully on the floor early next week dealing with blight. That's a bill by Representative Patrick Williams. The goal of that bill is to reduce the redemptive period of blighted properties from 3 years to 18 months. We see this certainly as a measure to help impact crime. This is something that was brought forward from our BRAC Crime Issue Council as a key strategy to reduce the crime rate in East Baton Rouge Parish. And so I know the East Baton Rouge Redevelopment Authority, they've worked on this proposal for about 2 years, engaging not only, you know, Baton Rouge, but their stakeholders across the state. And so certainly see this as a sound measure, again, to reduce the crime rate in our community.
Ryan at Southern University asks your opinion, Aaron, about the film tax credits. Are those a good thing? Should they stay as they are?
We certainly believe they're a good thing as well. I mean, it helps to create a base for film in our community. That's not something that we are focused on, particularly from a BRAC perspective. We have a separate industry that's a film industry that advocates for those film tax credits, but it's certainly something that we monitor closely.
Aaron is a native of Shreveport, who's been in Baton Rouge for some time, came here to go to LSU.
That's correct.
And a graduate of Southern's Law Center, and you worked, as I stated, in state government, so you've been here a few years.
I have, yes.
Yeah. How do you compare Baton Rouge with Shreveport?
I mean, certainly Baton Rouge is a great community. I mean, the legal community certainly is small here. I know a lot of my colleagues in different areas across the parish. Mm-hmm. I guess compared to Shreveport, we're still a growing economy. We've done a lot with our partnership with Shreveport-Bossier. We had the boardwalk. I know there's a strong casino base, if you will, in Shreveport. But certainly that's a thriving community as well.
Okay. And, of course, as far as the film business goes, it exceeds Baton Rouge, doesn't
it? It does. They've done a great job in, you know, capitalizing on that film tax credit and bringing in that film industry and movie industry to the area.
Now, you mentioned briefly the Medicaid discussion. Mm-hmm. Of course, yesterday there was a big development at the Capitol regarding Medicaid as an amendment. We can get into more of the inner workings, but nonetheless, it doesn't look like lawmakers are going to buck the governor on this. So what do you think?
Well, that's something that BRAC has not taken a position on. Certainly the Affordable Care Act, we provided information on that act to our small businesses and to other businesses being impacted by it. But we haven't really dove deep into the issue of Medicaid expansion. It's certainly something that we've looked at. Of course, we look at all legislation that has a possible impact on what we do as economic developers, but just simply hadn't done enough research to take a position on this particular issue.
Now, of course, the Secretary of Economic Development is Stephen Morey, who was recently head of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber.
Yes.
I know he and Adam know each other well. Do you work with him very closely?
Yeah, absolutely. We do work closely with LAD, certainly looking at their LAD managed incentives and our partnership on the economic development side. When we bring in projects to the state, we certainly partner with them on how to produce a package that best fits or entices that project to come and locate in the Capital Region. So have a great partnership with their team, including the Secretary of the Department.
And the Secretary is one Stephen Morey, who was at the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. You're not too far away from him, so he's not hard to find, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the Big Blue announcement, the IBM announcement, that's something that was a very positive and certainly a fine job done by Stephen Morey and Governor Jindal. How much did the chamber have as far as influence and impact on that?
Yes, we had an active role in that development. Again, working closely with LED, working closely with the governor, is something that we worked on the last several months. And so we're certainly proud of that deal. The governor's talked about it being a game changer, but it really is a game changer for the Capital Region, particularly for the landscape in downtown Baton Rouge. So we're excited about that project. They'll be working closely with LSU and Southern. They've had job fairs of recent, great response to those job fairs. But it's certainly critical when we look at those types of industry and what that impact will be on not only bringing our talent back to Baton Rouge, but what that means, again, for LSU and Southern and the students, what they have to look forward to when they graduate.
Jordan on Perkins inquires, Aaron, about the chamber's involvement in the Pennington Center. Are you fighting for preservation and enhancement of what goes on there?
Yes. I mean, one of our policy positions on Pennington particularly is finding a long-term funding stream for Pennington. It's something that we're certainly passionate about. Pennington is a national biomedical research center that does a lot not only for our community but across states. And so we're still looking through some measures this session. They have had appropriations in HB1, which are direct line item appropriations. We're not only looking at that but looking at other measures, again, for some long-term monies for that institution.
What do you think the future is for Pennington?
Well, I know that it's an issue in terms of fiscal capacity and how they broaden their base. That's certainly something that we've worked closely with Dr. Himesville on and working with Dr. Bill Jenkins on, and they've tried to address things internally. But they do a great job in terms of grant making authority and other making authorities, but it's still hard in terms of having a base level of funding.
Was the closing of Earl K. Long good or bad?
I don't know. Again, we didn't take a position on that either. Certainly, we just kind of looked toward the direction of our Capital Region legislators to gather their opinions on the issue. We then brought those issues back to our small business owners and those that are impacted by it.
Well, what did they tell you?
Well, it was opinions on both sides of the equation. Certainly, we have close relationships with our stakeholders and, again, with our hospitals. And so both had opinions, passionate opinions on both sides. We'll see how this, you know, merger takes place and what that closure means for the community most directly impacted and what Our Lady of the Lake will do in terms of that new partnership.
It seems to be too early to tell right now.
It is too early, yes.
But it's a bold move and one that if it doesn't work out well, it's going to be hard to reopen Earl K. Long.
Yeah, and I think that impact, again, like you said, is still unknown.
So we will see. But how, based on what you have heard, how's it going to work with Our Lady of the Lake becoming the I guess by default, the place where people would go who ordinarily would have gone to Earl K. Long?
I mean, certainly hope that it works well. We have a great relationship with Our Lady of the Lake. They have a passionate staff and team there to effect this change. I know there will be some bumps along the process, but I believe everybody has a best interest at heart in terms of identifying that preventive care for this population.
We're visiting with the dynamic Erin Monroe Wesley. She is the Chief Operating Officer at the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, and we will talk with her some more about what's going on in our community. If you'd like to join the conversation, 297-5633. Back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And Erin Monroe Wesley, native of Shreveport, graduate of LSU and Southern, and now the Chief Operating Officer for the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. And as noted, there has been a development in the squabble that was quite prominent last year. One of the most lively shows we had all of 2012 was between Steve Myers and Paul Nycan on opposite sides of this definition in Baton Rouge in the charter about what constitutes a family and whether people can live in a dwelling who are unrelated. And city sued Mr. Myers. There has been a judgment, we understand, from Judge Dennis Clark, and we will talk about that before we part company this afternoon. And we're trying to get in touch with both Mr. Myers and Mr. Nycan. 297-5633. Erin Monroe Wesley, what about the potential merger between BRCC and CATC? How's that going?
It's going well. That's Senate Bill 45 by Senator Yvonne Dorsey Colom. She also had a resolution last year to study this issue. We're certainly passionate about aligning our economic and workforce needs. The bill has moved through the process. We've not had any major issues. But certainly when you talk about unifying those systems, it's important to us to have that unification.
Why?
Well, it better aligns with what our needs are from a workforce perspective. And so to align that the technical college directly with what BRCC has to offer best fits our workforce and needs in the capital region.
How many students will there be if those two entities?
I'm not sure about the student count there. I know there are roughly five campuses at the Capital Area Technical College that will then shift into the Baton Rouge Community College. But I don't know about the specifics in terms of populations of the students there.
Do you think BRCC has had an impact on Southern University as far
in terms
as enrollment?
I know there's been an impact in enrollment at Southern University. There's been a shift in student and increase in student population at BRCC. I know that there's great leadership at Southern University, the system office in the Baton Rouge campus, and they're doing what they need to do to transform that system to allow for that increase in enrollment.
Okay. Development in the last few days, Brian Marshall's out as the head of CATS. Was that a surprise?
Certainly was a surprise to us.
Where do you think CATS goes from here?
Well, we hope that they improve the public transit system, certainly we've worked along with CATS and other community leaders with our work with the Blue Ribbon Commission several years in the making, and also just with our key community stakeholders on the issue. We'll see where things go. We're still early in the process, but certainly hope to remain engaged in terms of what's to come forward, whether it's a search committee or other processes that we can have an impact on.
Will there be a nationwide search for a successor to Mr. Marshall?
Well, that's certainly something up to the board. I believe they're having a special meeting today to really hash out those issues. I don't know what the board's direction is at this point.
And Brian Marshall, of course, came from Chicago.
Chicago, yes.
And had quite a reputation, but he came down here and just got engulfed in all kinds of things. And some say it's somewhere of his making, but I think for the most part, he was just reacting to the terrain. It's not the easiest place to run a public transit system.
And certainly when he came down, there was some instability in terms of the financial capacity of the system. I know we've shifted that, and they now have some long-term funding. And so we're at a great posture in terms of redeveloping the system, ensuring that we have improved routes and shelters and other issues to really transform that system that will then allow for rail, and other impacts on our community.
297-5633 for Erin Monroe Wesley, who is the Chief Operating Officer for the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. Charles on North Foster. How are you, Charles?
I'm good, Jim, and good morning to your guests. I have a two-part question. First part is, what was the Chamber's position on the closing of Earl K. Long here in North Baton Rouge? And the second part of that question is, Southern University, they will allow students to enroll through the Southern University Shreveport campus at Baton Rouge, and I think a lot of students don't know about that. And what's the Chamber's position about getting that information out to our area students who may not want to go to BRCC? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Well, certainly on the Earl K. Long, we did not take a position on that issue. We continue to monitor that and the impact on our citizens in the Capital Region. Secondly, in terms of the Southern University Baton Rouge campus and the Shreveport campus, we're certainly well aware of that Shreveport impact on SUBR. Again, like you mentioned, there is a satellite campus for those students that are attending Shreveport for that two-year coursework. I don't know if there's a greater awareness of the issue, but certainly we can help to get the word out, working in partnership with the leaders at Southern.
What do you think the biggest challenge is for Baton Rouge right now?
Biggest challenge? I think continuing the growth. I mean, we've had a lot of great projects to the Capital Region. We have a lot of key sectors that we're focused on and some emerging sectors as well. And so continuing that momentum in terms of economic development, of course, IBM, like we mentioned, was a game changer for Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. We have now a job count of 1,300 jobs with a target of 1,000 for this year. And so we've certainly performed well this year. We want to set records, as our folks will say at the office, but there's still a lot of great opportunity for growth in the region.
What about crime?
Crime is a big issue. And so, like we talked about, the blight bills that are going through the process, we also have a crime issue council that's focused not only on blight, but other key issues trying to tackle the crime rate. At our meeting on next month, we'll have the Brave officials come in and address their community policing work. And we're looking at other measures as well in terms of a misdemeanor jail or other opportunities to help reduce the crime rate.
When businesses are deliberating about whether to locate here in Baton Rouge, do they talk about the crime rate?
Crime has not been a big issue. The number one factor we see in terms of looking and having dialogue with our partners is education. And certainly we know that K through 12 education is important. That's our pipeline to the workforce of the future. BRAC was involved in the K through 12 education reforms on last year, and we continue to be engaged on that issue.
What about AIDS?
AIDS has not been an issue in terms of our conversations with business leaders. But looking at the Baton Rouge area, of course, we have a high AIDS rate.
The highest.
The highest rate, yes. And it's something that we certainly have to address. But it's not been an issue when we recruit companies to come to the area.
Why do you think public officials refrain from talking about that? I don't hear the governor talking about it very much. In fact, not at all. Don't hear Congressman Cassidy talking about it. The mayor has maybe mentioned it, but not a lot. Why do they refrain from talking about a tough subject like that?
I'm not sure. I don't know if there's still a stigma attached to the word AIDS or HIV positive. Certainly there was a stigma several years ago, but I think we've gotten beyond that as a community. But I can't articulate why other officials aren't bringing that conversation to the forefront.
Okay. Ari on Highland asks if BRAC will continue to endorse candidates in particular races.
Yes, Future PAC is our political action committee, and Future PAC is heavily engaged in the endorsement of candidates in the Capital Region. We'll certainly be engaged on next year as we have an upcoming election cycle. Our goal in looking at recruiting candidates is to ensure that we have pro-business officials in place to help advocate for policies that are key to our business community, and we'll continue to work through those measures.
Of course, BRAC has also gotten involved in school board races.
Yes, and we will again be involved in the school board race during this next cycle. We were heavily involved in the cycle 4 years ago.
And what is it about a candidate that you look for when you're supporting a candidate or in some cases running spots against an incumbent?
Yeah, I mean, looking at pro-business issues in general, I mean, certainly when you look at K through 12 education, the school board candidates, looking at some of those major reforms that we had on last year. So is choice an issue that they would advocate for? Is teacher tenure reform an issue that they can support or oppose?
You think choice is a good thing?
I think choice is a good thing. I think everybody should have access to a quality education. Certainly looking at the reforms from last year, our top priority was a teacher tenure reform. We believe that there needs to be a quality teacher in every classroom. But looking at choice, looking at teacher tenure, early childhood accountability, teacher tenure reform was our biggest win on last year.
That was something that, of course, it was very controversial. Unions were on the other side.
Yes.
And because of that, I would imagine the fact that BRAC gets involved so intently in politics may turn off a few folks.
It will. But again, because we base our policies in research, we're able to have that background information to provide against our policy position.
And on other matters, you were in favor of the CATS tax.
Yes. Our Future PAC board did endorse the CATS tax.
And were successful in getting it passed.
Yes, that's correct.
How much does it mean to get the BRAC blessing in a campaign?
I'm not sure. I mean, you would have to ask the CATS officials.
Well, it would seem to have helped people like Barbara Reich Freiberg and the CATS tax, an issue measure. BRAC tends to win most of its battles.
Well, yeah, thank you. I mean, yeah, we do have a sound board that makes those decisions. We're confident in the reasoning behind those decisions. And I think people in the community understand that. It's not based on politics, but it's embedded in true research.
All right. Stephanie inquires about John White, the superintendent of education. Do you think he's doing a good job?
I do think he's doing a good job, yes. And we help support him with some of those K-12 reforms on last year and this year.
He's, of course, one who has drawn criticism. It kind of goes with the territory, but considering the agenda, there's no doubt that some people are not going to be all that enthused about his positions. Do you think he'll stay?
I hope that he stays. I think he's provided great leadership for the state. Again, like you said, there are tough issues, so families are passionate on both sides of the issue. But I think he's done a great job to really address reform, and we're now at the forefront in terms of other states looking at what Louisiana's done in terms of reform.
What is your annual budget?
We have a budget about $4 million.
$4 million a year, and let's say how much is that put aside for political purposes?
Well, that's the BRAC budget. And so Future PAC, which is our political action committee, is a separate entity. It's independent of BRAC, yes.
But in the last cycle, Aaron, how much did the Future PAC spend?
Our last election cycle, let me see. I think we spent about maybe $50,000 or $60,000 on elections. And that's a rough estimate based on my memory.
And the funding comes from various sources, but what are the most prominent?
Individuals and corporate members. And so we, you know, work and look at who's out there advocating for political issues, and we go and seek those donations to support our base.
And the mayor's office also made a substantial, it makes an annual contribution, doesn't it?
They do to BRAC. And so with our economic development arm, we do support the work of the mayor. We are the economic development arm of the city of Baton Rouge. And so Jared Smith heads up those efforts for us. Mm-hmm.
And downtown with the IBM development will be even bigger and better.
Yes.
And the Hampton, it's about to open, isn't it?
It is. We're excited about that.
What, this month?
I believe it's this month, yes.
I know April 15th was the target date.
Yes.
And if you walk by there, you can see it's getting close. But downtown has taken a new look since you first arrived here from Shreveport as a college student.
It has. I mean, if you look at 3rd Street, look at some of the developments to come. It's been great in terms of transforming downtown to really a place that people enjoy coming to.
Well, thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.
Good luck to you, and keep up the enthusiasm.
Okay. Thank you.
297-5633 is your number, and as stated, we are endeavoring to make contact with both Steve Myers and Paul Nakhan on opposite sides of this court fight that ensued after this program on April 11th of a year ago, in which Mr. Myers had been sued by the city regarding some homes that he owns and operates in which people unrelated were living there in a violation of the city charter. And Myers challenged it in court. And we understand there has been a ruling from Judge Janice Clark, and we will be talking about that in a few minutes. Did want to note that a man who is a friend to this show, who was on this program many times, including three times last year, once called by Ronald Reagan the most dangerous man in America, Bob Edgar, who served as president of Common Cause. He died Tuesday at his home in Burke, Virginia, after collapsing while running on a treadmill. 69 years old, a minister, Methodist minister, married 48 years to the same woman, really an amazing man, and one who walked the walk, and a six-term Pennsylvania congressman as well. Also was a leader of American churches in his tenure as a minister. He died much too young at the age of 69. But, Kevin, let's go back last year to a sampling of the words of Bob Edgar.
We at Common Cause are pretty concerned that this year is going to be the most moneyed election in the history of the United States, with super PACs and with the results of Citizens United. And we think this is just another way for the corporatizing of our democracy. And you make the point about Alec's involvement with these for-profit schools. They are doing great damage to our public education with some of the proposals that go so far to the right that it's very difficult to keep quality education in the public system when the money is drained off for some of these for-profit institutions.
That's Bob Edgar, 69 years young. He died at his home 2 days ago in Virginia. After losing a U.S. Senate race to Arlen Specter in Pennsylvania, after serving six terms in Congress, Edgar worked to help some political campaigns, and he taught at many places, worked on arms control issues, and in 2000 he was named General Secretary of the National Council of Churches, more than 100,000 local congregations and 45 million congregants. One of his first actions was to become a leading advocate for the return of six-year-old Elian Gonzalez to his father in Cuba against the opposition of his relatives in Florida and many critics of Fidel Castro. He was a brave man, took some brave positions, sometimes controversial ones, but never shied from a fight, and from the fighting city of Philadelphia, Bob Edgar will be missed, dead at 69. As noted, a court case involving Mr. Steve Myers, who ran for mayor last year, and he got 4,256 votes, same number of votes that Pete Rose got in hits in his major league career. And Mr. Myers has apparently won the first battle in court. Judge Janice Clark, and I'm reading from her decision right now, finds that the petitioner, the city parish, has failed to establish that the defendant, Myers, is in violation of the definition of family contained in and applied to in the Unified Development Code. So Steve Myers wins a district court battle, and this is something that will possibly be appealed by the city. But here was a feisty exchange last year between Myers and his most vocal opponent, Paul Nockan, a neighbor of some of Myers' tenants, on this show on April 11th a year ago. Definition based on a 1978 ordinance on what constitutes a family dwelling in Baton Rouge. Am I right?
I'm not sure what you're reading from one from 1978. I'm going by the current Unified Code.
Well, this stems back 34 years. Yeah. But what is a family dwelling? What constitutes a family dwelling?
A family dwelling is, one, an individual or two or more persons are related.
I'm going to have to interrupt every time I hear an inaccurate statement, because
this is printed from the city.
And you obviously can't read it and
interpret
it.
Well, let me tell you, Jim,
we are going to have a problem here, because for 15 years, these people have been putting out misinformation and disinformation.
All right, hold your fire. The family dwelling means, according to what I have, an individual.
I might interrupt you.
No, Steve, I'm telling you what, if you don't stop, we're going to cut your mic off. All right, that was last year, and if we can find Myers and Nockan, obviously this is going to be telephonically. Hopefully it will be a more pleasant exchange, but Myers has won battle number one, and of course this was a major plank in his campaign for mayor a year ago, in which he finished behind Kip Holden and Mike Walker and Gordon Meese, who was also in that race. But Judge Janice Clark has ruled that the petitioner, the city parish, has failed to establish that Myers is in violation of the definition of family contained in and applied to the Unified Development Code. Now, Nockan's complaint was that many students live in his neighborhood around LSU and live in a house on Cherrydale in particular that involves people who are unrelated and being there, and Nockan didn't particularly like that. He thinks that this is a neighborhood that should have families and not tenants who are unrelated and move in and out. Reading more from Judge Clark's ruling, the court further finds there is no rational basis for the definition of family in the code that furthers a state objective of treating creative kinship networks and families such as same-sex relationships, non-marital childbirth, cohabitation, foster homes, and the like. We'll talk more when we return after this 90-second timeout. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Steve Myers and Paul Nockan, guests on this show a little over a year ago, and were arguing, and I think that's the correct term, about what constitutes a single-family dwelling or a definition of family, and as it applies to the law in Baton Rouge and the Unified Development Code. Well, there has been a development. Judge Janice Clark has ruled in favor in district court of Mr. Stephen C. Myers, saying that the city parish, in its bid to sue Mr. Myers, has failed to establish that the defendant is a violation of the definition of family. Mr. Myers, your reaction to this development?
Well, Jim, thank you, and I guess I need to congratulate you on your reportorial acumen, because we were actually going to release it sometime today. I'm not sure how you discovered it, but we didn't find out till yesterday afternoon that the judge had ruled and issued some written ruling, so we'll be notifying the media today. Restrained response, premature elation and celebration. You don't want to be posteric on something like this, because there is always the potential for an appeal, and this appeal would actually go directly to the Louisiana Supreme Court, since it's a district court declaring an ordinance unconstitutional.
So do you think it will be appealed?
Well, with the budget problems that the city has, it would take a lot of money. We're already starting a legal defense fund in order to raise funds from other landlords. The Baton Rouge Independent Landlords Organization will be mobilized, help with legal expenses, maybe file amicus briefs. But I don't know. You'll have to ask the city that. I think it's pretty clear that the judge was pretty strong in her language that the way this thing is enforced and what it attempts to do is simply not going to measure up. And a lot of times I think these governmental entities decide that a 60-year-old arcane law that was instituted at the time of segregation is probably worth just letting go.
The case involved how many suits against you?
Well, I mean, I've had at least four and probably six or eight over the last 20 years. I've been trying to get the city to look at reexamining that law for many, many years, and they've pretty much hunkered down. I think the key to remember is that we are not against zoning. We are not against having single-family areas. We want, at least I want my right, my tenants, you know, to have the right to enjoy the tranquil serenity of their neighborhood as well. But the idea that all families are now made up like the nuclear family of the 1950s is just simply not realistic. Our expert witness, Dana Berkowitz from LSU Sociology, was quite persuasive, I believe, in her statistical analysis of the family. And, of course, you know, my attorneys, Grant Gilliatt and Wade Shows, John Walsh at the firm of Shows, Callie and Walsh. I mean, the whole team. This was a big case. I mean, it's a huge case. I've said that 1977 Cherrydale may stand right there with the Liberty Bell in Louisiana, the symbol of individual liberty and private property rights.
So you're represented by Wade Shows and his staff, and Judge Clark in her ruling says, she further declares that the definition of family contained in and applied to the Unified Development Code for the City of Baton Rouge Parish of East Baton Rouge is unconstitutional and unenforceable, ordering the city parish to pay cost. All right, so you think it'll be appealed possibly. Steve says the city parish may not go to the Supreme Court, but let's get some observations from the man who's been most vocal on the other side, who has joined us telephonically. Hold tight, Steve Myers, and let's hear from Mr. Paul Nockan. Paul, what is your assessment of what has happened in Judge Clark's courtroom?
Well, her decision does not surprise me at all. Many people, when they found out that Judge Clark was going to be the judge in this, they said, be prepared to go to the Court of Appeals. And the parish attorney, Mary Roper, has told me that if they lose in front of Judge Clark, that they will definitely appeal it. There's been rulings by the United States Supreme Court on this in favor of single-family. Single-family residences were developed for families. You can say whatever you want about what a family is today, but we all know what families have been for centuries. And it's family is trying to be distorted, I believe, by the opposition here. And we are prepared, like I said, that they're going to appeal it to the Supreme Court. And like I said, the United States Supreme Court has already ruled. And money's not going to be an object for the city, because if necessary, there'll be a whole bunch of us that'll put up money to help with this.
Why do you think Judge Clark was not a good judge for you?
Well, it's people that I, you know, spoke to saying, hey, you know, Judge Clark is the judge in this. They said, oh, my goodness, there's no telling what's going to come of this. And what their thinking was, I don't know. I've never had any experience with Judge Clark. But we all were prepared in the very beginning to know that this ruling could happen by her, and that next course is the Court of Appeals.
Did you testify, Paul?
Yes, I did.
How did that go?
There wasn't much that, well, no, I didn't actually testify that much in court because it seemed like I wasn't really chosen to say that much. The judge moved on to different things, and I don't know if she just didn't want to hear much of what I had to say or what. I'm not real familiar with a lot of court proceedings because I've never been in them before.
297-5633. She ruled, Paul, and we'll get back to Steve in just a moment here, but she ruled the evidence is overwhelming that this non-traditional family, these graduates and contractors, have not caused a decrease in property value. Do you agree with that?
No, I do not, because there are, just like the home on Cherrydale where Steve Myers went in and concreted the whole front yard and put angular parking in there, a prospective buyer that wants to buy a house next door, when he sees a parking lot front yard, that is going to deter him from wanting to buy in the area. And we don't want, and I've spoken to people in a number of other subdivisions, that we don't want, you know, our area turning into an area like State Street and Carlotta Street over there at LSU. This was set up for families, and we plan on taking it wherever it has to go to get all this reversed and make sure it continues as a single-family neighborhood.
All right, Steve Myers, I'm sure you've been digesting Mr. Nakhan's remarks. What is your response?
Well, I'm not going to respond point by point. Judge Clark's a distinguished jurist. You know, there was a lot of people wanted her to make a quick decision, but she... And I thank her and thank the court, commend the court for taking the time necessary to give the case the thoughtful consideration that's warranted to overturn a 60-year-old law. This is a big deal. And the fact of the matter is that Mr. Nakhan can take his case to Judge Judy. We based our case on legal principles, legal issues. And, Judge, this is a victory for the U.S. Constitution and the Louisiana Constitution. And let me point out that the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that everyone refers to, the Village of Belterre versus Boras, has been overturned in New York State and New Jersey by the state constitutions. It is not even good law in the areas where it was originally instituted. So the model definition of family that Baton Rouge based its definition on is unconstitutional in the place where it was initially implemented in 1974.
297-5633, if you'd like to join us in our remaining time. Steve Myers, lawyer and real estate mogul. He has about 50 properties he owns and operates in this community. He has prevailed in district court. Judge Janice Clark has ruled in his favor. Paul Nakhan, who was an advocate for the law that was just overturned, he says this is headed for the state Supreme Court. Steve says a city parish may not waste its time, but some would say it'd be hardly wasting its time. Of your 50 or so properties, Steve, how many would be in violation of the code that was just thrown out?
Well, see, that's part of the problem is that, you know, as a lawyer, too, I look at the legal issues. The fact of the matter is I don't know, because I don't ask prospective tenants whether they're related or not. One of the problems with the local law is it puts all landlords in a very difficult, conflicting position where they would potentially have to violate a federal law, fair housing law, in order to comply with an unconstitutional local ordinance. You cannot discriminate based on familial status. And so as a result, by simply asking whether a prospective tenant has children and so forth, would potentially put you in conflict with federal fair housing laws. If you want to go to the MyersMessage.com, your listeners can read all of the legal documents. This is not a soundbite case. This is a very significant, detailed constitutional case that involves the due process, equal protection, freedom of association, contract rights, right to privacy. Judge Clark, you know, gave the case, I think, the attention that it deserved, and I think she came out with the right result. And, you know, it's not that they're going to be taking this. It's going to be the taxpayer. It's going to be Mayor Holden. It's going to be William Daniel. It's going to be the city council putting up $10, $20, $50, $100, $200,000 in order to fight this. But if they fight, we'll continue to fight. You know, there's been cases in the other parts of the country where these cases have been brought under Section 1983, a civil rights actions in federal court. Judge Brady just ruled on one and ordered significant damages against the city, including costs and attorney's fees in a case with a group home, which are...
All right, hold tight. So let's get to a few callers. We'll get to as many of you as we can with Steve and Steve Myers and Paul Knockan. Christina on Corsi. Christina, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Jim. Hey, I'm going to sidestep just for a second about the house on Cherry Street. I'm wondering if...
Cherrydale.
Anyway, I think the issue with that house is the fact that it has a concrete front yard. And most subdivisions nowadays have certain laws that prevent something like this from happening. And just from what I've been hearing, the issue is that neighbors don't want that cement front yard next door. So that would be a separate issue.
All right. What do you say to that, Steve?
Well, I'm suspecting Christine has never seen the house, and she's basing it on misinformation from your other guests. But the fact of the matter, it doesn't have a concrete front yard. It has more grass, and I've measured the square footage, than most other garden homes. And it has less concrete than Mr. Knockan's own house.
All right, Paul, your response about the house at 19...
That's ridiculous.
Is that it? James on Independence. James, good morning. You're on with Paul and Steve. Hi, James.
Well, thank you. I agree with the previous caller, I think, that the city and Mr. Myers' other opponents are missing the point. If their objection is to extra parking space for too many cars, then that's what the ordinance should address, rather than worrying about the specific nature of the relationship of whoever is living inside the house. And I'd be curious about your guest's response to that observation. Thanks.
All right. Paul, do you want to take that one? Were you addressing the wrong issue?
Jim, would you just give me a question?
James in Independence says that you should have been addressing, if your issue was parking, you should have been addressing parking.
Trying to shift this to parking. It's not just that. We're talking about all the homes that in this neighborhood, right down from ex-Congressman Henson Moore, their houses, where it's just filled with on-the-grass parking everywhere, loud noise, just unbelievable things that don't normally go on in an A1 single-family residential area. And everybody bought their homes in these A1 single-family residential areas knowing what the laws were then and are really now. And they're just trying to disguise things with all of this unconstitutionality and all this. The masses are going to stand together. I've talked to hundreds of people in our neighborhood and some other neighborhoods in town, and they are ready to gather together and really go after this.
All right, Steve, are you concerned about the masses banding together?
James I'm not, because they've been saying that for years. In fact, we've never had a complaint about the Cherrydale house except from your other guests. But James's logic is sound, because that's exactly what the New York and New Jersey Supreme Court said. It actually is what Justice Marshall said in U.S. Supreme Court decisions, that there are less intrusive means to achieve any government goal or state interest as to parking or noise or nuisance or anything else than controlling who you choose to live with. Your guest does not understand the constitutional issues at stake here. We are for zoning. We are for tranquility. We have it on Cherrydale. We have it in most areas of town. And you cannot have exceptional policy when your policies are based on exceptions. What the city has tried to do, this actually goes back to the 50s and race, but that's another show topic.
All right, Judy on River Road, please be brief. Judy, you'll be our final caller. Go ahead.
Okay, having lived in some sketchy neighborhoods in Baton Rouge, could this possibly be tying also into noise ordinance or liquor ordinances and not necessarily one-family home ordinances?
All right, Steve, what about other ordinances that might come into play?
Well, I think that's the point that James was making and the courts made. There are less intrusive means and other forms of controlling what might be called offensive behavior than who you live with. I mean, let's face it, a 12-person group home could live in a house and be legal under the Americans with Disability Act, but three young lawyers, contractors, engineers that want to live in the Southbounds area and take advantage of that area, Tranquility could not live under this ordinance.
Thank you, Steve Myers, and thank you, Paul Nockan. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim.
And we shall return tomorrow. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.